binge movie aftertaste, Indiana Jones. You know, by the way, first one of you freaking binge fucks that take a shot at Karen Allen got to answer to me. That woman was my sexual awakening. She's still my sexual awakening, so yeah. All right, binge movie aftertaste.
You're listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network on bingemedia.net. And now, the binge aftertaste.
Tannis development proceeding. Choir headpiece, staff of Ra, Abner Ravenwood, U.S.
Nazis have discovered Tannis.
Just what does that mean to you, Tannis?
Well, the city of Tannis is one of the possible resting places of the Lost Ark.
The Lost Ark?
Yeah, the Ark of the Covenant, the chest the Hebrews used to carry around the Ten Commandments.
What do you mean, Ten Commandments? You're talking about the Ten Commandments?
Yes, the actual Ten Commandments, the original stone tablets that Moses brought down out of Mount Horeb and smashed, if you believe in that sort of thing. Any guys ever go to Sunday school?
Shared. It's disgraceful. You're old enough to be her grandfather.
Well, I'm as human as the next man.
I was the next man.
Hold on to your potatoes, binge listeners, as Binge Media proudly presents the Binge Movie Aftertaste Indiana Jones Retrospective.
Don't call me Junior.
Join Garrett, Law, and Nate as they look at and dissect the four films of the Indiana Jones franchise.
Come on, show a little backbone, will ya?
From throwing Alfred Molina the idol, to waking up crystal skull aliens, the boys crack their whips for this in-depth look at this much-beloved series.
Prepare to meet Kali in hell.
How many 10 of 10s will this retrospective bring?
You know how to fly, don't you?
No, do you?
Why does Nate hate this franchise so much?
Son of a bitch.
And what is the over-under of how many bottles Law will piss in within these four podcasts?
Whiskey.
Choose wisely. And listen to find out.
Asps. Very dangerous. You go first.
All coming up, courtesy of Binge Media.
Raiders of the Lost Ark released June 12, 1981. Budget on it was $18 million. Box office was $389.9 million worldwide, and it was directed by the one and only Steven Spielberg. I am joined today by two people everybody knows very well. First, the guy who just was on for the Goovies, and man, he's getting more airtime this week than I am, Mr. Nate Peterson. What's going on, Nate?
Thank you for the intro. I didn't expect to go first. I assumed that Jim Law would get it, but thank you for placing me first. Yeah, I'm good. The Goovies seem to have gone down pretty well with people, so I'm pretty much part of the binge furniture now.
Yeah, people got the shaft, but we'll talk about that off air. And I'm also joined by a guy who, I think the last time I was in the hosting chair and I was on the air with Jim, I think we were talking about David Fincher for 2 hours. I am joined by co-founder of Binge Media, Mr. Jim Law. What's going on, Jim?
Hey, what's up? I have no recollection of what you just said about that David Fincher conversation at all.
You have no recollection of that whatsoever?
No.
It was like 4 years ago that we did that.
Yeah, no.
Even I Nate, and I wasn't on it.
I want to talk to Nate. Let me talk to Nate for a minute, Garrett.
Go for it.
If you could just wander off for 5 minutes.
Yeah, I'll go to the bathroom. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. I was very excited about the Goovies, Nate, but I couldn't help but you got a little angry at parts, I noticed. That was very uncharacteristic of how I see you, Nate. you kind of turned on Pete MC. You were cut. You even had a couple jabs at me during the Goobies. What was going on? Were you cranky?
I didn't have any jabs. Oh, you certainly did. I didn't, Jim. I just said that you were relentless in your desire for me to get the Goobies up and running. That's all I said, and that's not a lie.
There were some age jabs and some other jabs.
Oh, yes. Actually, yeah.
I just hope I have the happy, and I know it's very, very late for you right now, and I know that your appreciation for these films that we're about to talk about are not up to par with ours, but I just hope that you're in better spirits tonight, is all I'm saying.
I'm in good spirits. It's all in fun. I've got an angry side, Jim. You know, I've got a dark.
I don't want to see it. So that's fine that you have it. I don't want to see it or hear it ever. Is that okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
Excuse me while I just rewrite my notes for these two.
Raiders of the Lost Ark, boys. I think I've made my feelings on this movie pretty well known. There's going to be no suspense. It is my favorite movie of all time. Law, how did you come across this film? Did you watch it when you were a kid? Did you fall in love with it when you first watched it? Where are we coming from here?
Oh, absolutely. I saw it in the theater. And I specifically remember even back to when the first time I saw the trailer for this film in the theater. And I remember it because it was Han Solo, right? It was Han Solo in a different role. And I didn't understand really what was going on. Hmm. So he came on screen and I was kind of like, what the fuck? What is happening right now? Like, that's why is he on a horse? I remember, and I'm not even kidding. I remember asking myself that question. Why is Han Solo on a horse? And at the end of the trailer, I had convinced myself that that looks stupid. Like, this movie looks stupid. I'm never going to see it. It has been in my top five films for over 25, 30 years. Mm. I love this film with an absolute passion. For them to take an iconic character and make him even more iconic is a feat that I will never understand how they did it. I really don't. Yeah. I believe that Indiana Jones is the greatest character of all time. And I love my Star Wars and I love my Han Solo. But what they did with this film, which I consider, and we'll get to it, a perfect film, is pretty fucking unbelievable. I've only grown to love it more year by year by year.
And we have the skeptic of the series on the podcast, Mr. Nate Peterson. Now, Nate, when I asked you to be on this podcast, you were hesitant at first, but you decided to eventually go through with it. What is it about these movies and this character that you just don't like before we get into the actual film?
For the record, I am still hesitant. We're 10 minutes into the show, and I'm still not sure I should be on there. I don't know. Like, I think part of the problem is with this and other films is that I've come to it late. I only saw the first three for the first time probably 10 to 15 years ago.
Mm.
Obviously, massively aware of them. They are. I can't dispute how iconic they are. I would never try and talk anyone down for, you know, try and persuade people these are bad films. It is just something that just doesn't resonate with me. I remember watching them for the first time and just not. That just didn't do anything for me, but I thought, you know, given how big they were, I should stick with them and watch the whole trilogy, even though after the first film, I pretty much knew I wasn't going to like the other two. And and so I had no interest in ever watching these again until one day you emailed myself and Jim and you said, hey guys, we're doing this show. I don't think you officially asked me. I think to this day you still haven't asked me if I wanted to be on the show. But here I am. So, and the good news is we watched these peek behind the curtain. We were originally going to do this show last June, and yeah, for whatever reason, it didn't happen, and it's dragged on, and then last week you said, oh guys, I want you to watch these films again, and it's like, oh for fuck's sake. So I've now watched the first two three times, and once was more than enough. So yeah,
I didn't mean to bring your life down, Nate.
I think you did, Garrett. I said this to you the other day. I think you brought me on this just to deflect a little bit of the shit talking my way, just to get it away from you for a week.
You're
just
not
to
wrong.
Give you a little bit of respite, and then
needs a mark to step in for him. Yeah. Like, I understand.
What's up, Jim?
on what planet would you have ever expected to hear a story of, I watched Raiders and then I was like, well, never going to watch that again. Like, who
I'm
in
done.
The fuck? Like, how could you? I don't understand. I swear to God, I know it was 10 years ago. And was the hype was probably astronomical for you, right? Like, leading up to it, like, you had probably heard about it for years, 20 years or so.
Yes. I mean, obviously, you can't escape the hype because it is considered one of the best films of all time and certainly one of the most iconic. So there is. But at the same time, it's not like I watched it 5 years after it was released. You know, there was enough time where it's not like people were all talking about it. So I kind of went in relatively fresh.
I can see how somebody could watch, say, Crystal Skull and say, you know, I think I'm rather done. But Raiders of the Lost Ark, you watched that. That was your first intro to this character. It was everybody's first intro to this character. 30 years ago, people were craving more of this character, and they brought it to us 4 years later. You're saying you watched Raiders of the Lost Ark, and you're like, I'm done. No more of this character.
Yeah, I was done. But even then, I, as a completist, I decided I wanted to watch the whole three because of the hype that had been there for 20 years by that stage and knowing how many people loved it. I wanted to see if I could be convinced. We're now 10 to 15 years later, and I'm still not. So...
my first intro to this movie, it was the week my family got HBO for the very first time. All right. The very first image I saw was Sala and Indy lifting that ark out of the stone. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into it when we get into it. But I'm telling you, from that moment on, I knew I was in love. Like, it was just, I was a kid. I sat and I watched the rest of that movie and I said, I want to watch more of this. And we went and rented it, I think the next week or something. And even as a kid, I'm like you, Law. I wanted more of this character. I wanted more and more. So
I've now changed my stance three times coming into this recording. Okay. So at first I was like, look, we're going to do fucking retrospective on Raiders and that. Like, I thought Raiders was not going to take too long because we're all in agreement. It's one of the greatest films ever made. And I cannot wait to talk about Temple Doom. Like, I honestly can't. I watched this shit last night. I'm fucking pumped to talk about it because I got mad shit to talk about it. It's fucking, honestly, I loved rewatching last night. Then I turned and I was like, look, I know that Nate's been dropping little hints that he doesn't like this movie. So now my main goal is to protect Raiders from the British invasion and also talk mad shit about Temple of Doom. Now we've changed one more time. And I am determined, and I don't think we're going to move on from Raiders tonight because this is going to take fucking forever. I am determined to pick your fucking little bald brain as to what it is that you cannot like about this film. We are going to figure this out, Garrett. I am fucking determined to figure this out tonight.
Can I just say, though, I will admit this. Between watching it the first time and watching it the second time, my view on Raiders did improve. I remember walking away from the first viewing thinking, fuck this movie, fuck this series.
Jesus Christ.
That right there, you're not speaking English, sir. That doesn't, no one in the world has ever fucking uttered the sentence you just said. No one.
But by the time I watched the second time, I was like, okay, maybe it's okay. So.
Well, if nobody minds, let's get into what Nate saw and actually hated about this fucking movie, all right? We start off and the Paramount logo's in full view. It disintegrates into a mountain and we see our crew. And I'm going to say, boys, one thing I love about this intro is Indy is an almost enigma until about 5 minutes in. We see him from the waist up. We see him pick a dart out. But it's his crew who is telling us what is going on, with the natives being on their trail. And right away, it's like you're building intrigue with this character.
I will say that I did like this. I did like the way he was introduced. I liked that, even though... obviously, coming off the back of Star Wars, you know, Ford's stock was massively high, and obviously everyone knew he was playing this role, but the way he's introduced in the film, they treat it very well.
And like, you feel like the job they had to do to make this character separate, think about that. Think about the introduction he gets. And the whole time you're thinking, there's fucking Han Solo. Like, there's Han Solo. Like, everybody in the world is saying, there's Han Solo. And he's still... comes away from this film being one of the greatest movie characters of all time. And everybody forgets about Han Solo. Think about the level of filmmaking that takes to separate one of the most iconic characters from one of the most iconic franchises of all time and give him his own shit, and he owns it. It's fucking, it's unprecedented.
Let me ask you this, Law. and Nate, if you care to answer, would this intro have worked with Tom Selleck wearing that fedora? Because that was the original plan. Yeah,
that's a double-edged sword. Okay, look, I still think. Obviously, I don't think the character is as good because I think Harrison Ford brings something to this character that no one else could have, and it's his it's his little smarmy sarcasm, quirkiness. But while I'm saying he separated himself from Han Solo, the Han Solo, the Star Wars shit brought recognition to him as an actor, which made this an instant must-see. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he relied on that until he didn't have to rely on it. And it's not too long in this movie that he doesn't have to rely on it too much. You know what I mean? So is there the same impact as Tom Selleck? Absolutely not. Like, I mean, it's not even close. It might be still a good movie. It might be a good little adventure movie, but in no way is it as big as it is.
Completely where was Selleck in his career at this point? Was he on Magnum PI?
He was on Magnum. In fact, that was the reason he did not get the role. They had already gotten him, but CBS would not let him out of Magnum in order for him to actually play the role. So I wonder if Selleck just kicks himself every single time he sees something.
He had a great career,
don't get me wrong, and he probably still sees residuals from Magnum PI every fucking week, but he has to just say, God, why did CBS not let me have that contract?
it's always difficult because we always say that, but you never know. Like you said, it's not the same movie with him. It doesn't have the same, you know, resonance and success, and therefore you don't necessarily have that same thing to regret. So I would say I like Selleck, but I don't feel the little I know of his filmography, he would have fit the character as well as Ford does.
Before we move on, is it a British thing at all? Like, is this as big in Britain as it is here, or
no, it's huge here. It's just my own perverted ways, yeah.
All right.
Perverted ways. Why would you think it was a British thing? Just because Belloc?
I don't know. Like, maybe it's just not like. I know that there's more popular things in other countries, right? Like,
yeah,
easily. And I just thought, like, maybe this wasn't as popular in Britain. Like, maybe they just didn't get it. I don't know. I don't know why. I don't think it's like a patriotic fucking American film or anything like that. I just didn't know.
As far as I'm aware, it's. I don't know if it's as big. I can't sort of answer that. But it's certainly a very big film over here. It's not like. Yeah, it's not like we as a nation have anything against it.
I hate to jump ahead, but is the end of Temple really big in Britain? Because, you know, they save the day. Yeah. Like, is that a big deal or no?
No.
Okay, because it's not for us either. We're just like, what the fuck?
We hear a Star Wars-esque of sound effects as creatures are uttering calls in the background. I like that touch that Spielberg added. If you watch the behind-the-scenes features, he says that he added that in specifically, you know, as a callback to Star Wars. And if you watch the intro, you can kind of hear those animal calls. Those aren't earthly animals. I mean, those are straight from Star Wars. And I thought
absolutely. Again, easing the character into a different character, right? Like, you're just kind
of... Positively, yeah.
You're comfortable. It's Han Solo. Mm-hmm. There's Star Wars noises. Let's move on. Let's see what else we got.
And by no means the only Star Wars noise that I recall hearing in this film and the second film.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the same sound effects guy, so of course.
Yeah, exactly.
It isn't until Indy is about to get double-crossed and we finally get a look at him. The whip cracks behind him and he walks into full view from the shadows. And here is our intro to the character, gentlemen. Fantastic. Just fantastic. And he's going to get double-crossed more than once on this trip, but this is where we finally see him. And I don't know, Nate, I'm trying to see it from your eyes, man. I don't know how you cannot be intrigued at this point. What are you thinking at this very moment when this intro happens?
Oh, I'm thinking, isn't it amazing how he's pulled out a whip, pulled it back and whipped the gun out of the guy's hand after the gun's been cocked and he's basically got the gun on him.
You're looking for realism in a movie that 1930 serials.
At this point, we're 5 minutes. We're 5 minutes.
Are you serious right now? Is that what you were thinking when you first watched this film?
Absolutely. It's certainly the thing that I looked at when I watched it. The last year, I can't recall what I said, what I thought the very, very first time I saw it, but yeah, it jumped out at me. I was like, that's ridiculous.
So, when, okay, the first time you were introduced to Han Solo in Star Wars, were you, did you say, well, why wouldn't Greedo just fucking shoot him right away instead of kept talking to him? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're breaking it down at a fucking astronomically douchebag level where that, you could just say everything that they're doing could be different, done a different way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but at the same time, using that example, he was trying to take him back to Jabba the Hutt. He had a reason to not necessarily shoot straight away. What I'm saying is the guy's got a gun on him already. He's cocked the gun. It's ready to fire. And after that, Indiana Jones has been able to pull out his whip, turn around.
But
and
that's what makes him spectacular. You don't know why he does it, but you still want to know why.
Okay. Yes, that's we want to know why.
The spider scene here always got me as a kid. Oh, on the absolutely. Back of Indy, there are like 5 or 6 spiders. Alfred Molina turns around and there's like 80 spiders on his back. It's like, what the hell was he wearing to make those spiders go on him?
Exactly.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And I remember this being like one of the first times I'd ever been succumbed to like movie trivia, you know? Like, there's always these rumors that they were real tarantulas, first of all. And when he brushed them off, they were like dying when they hit the ground. So they had to reshoot it and put down like some sort of fucking padding or something for the tarantulas to land on.
Oh, wow.
Because they were just like fucking, he was like brushing them off his back and they were just like exploding when they hit the ground or something like that. I remember hearing that when I was a kid. I was like, oh, that's amazing. And also, this is the creepiest shit of all time.
Go, spider killer, go.
How does Indy know to stay out of the light? That was just something I used to ask that when I was a kid, but now it's like with how much he, you know, studies archaeology and things, I can go with it, but I just don't know. Like, he tells Ephraim Lila, like, stay out of the light. It's like, but he's Indy, he knows.
Oh, now we're looking at realism. Okay.
No, I'm just, okay, I'm asking questions here. That's all I'm asking. Like, how does he know to stay out of the light?
This is something I thought about while watching Temple last night, because in Temple, Indy's kind of stupid.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fucking shit that he gets himself into because he's just dumb. And I'm like, Temple is, you know, it is a prequel. So I'm like, maybe like this is dumb Indy. And he learned so much from fucking all these adventures over the years that maybe he knows the state of the light. Because for fuck's sakes, he drinks a fucking, okay, I don't want to do Temple right now. I do want to do Temple right now, but I don't want to do Temple right now. I mean, he fucking has a drink rolled over to him by the main bad guy and he just drinks it. Like, what the fuck are you, what are you doing? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the stupidest fucking move I've ever seen. And Raiders, stay out of the light.
There you go.
He's way more wise than Raiders, boys.
What I love about this idol scene, when they finally get to the idol, is that, like, we have no idea what it is, right? Like, only that our hero is coming after it. So it's pretty much the perfect intro to a character because, you know, he's going after this thing. We don't know why. We just know that he's coming after it. And the way Spielberg films this, it's just spectacular.
Fucking one of the Nate, at what point did you write off this opening scene as a whole, or do you, after it's done, after he gets on the plane and the fucking takes off and the, you know, the snake and all that shit, after that's done, did you take a deep breath and say that was pretty good, or you just say, oh, fuck?
No, I mean, I do like, to some, I don't love like you guys do, but I do like a lot of this opening scene. I do like the intensity of this moment. You know, obviously I'm going in with a completely different mindset to you guys, but I would imagine had I watched this when I was a kid or whatever, when it first came out, that moment of, you know, the swap and things like that, that would have been quite an intense, and bearing in mind, we're only what, 10 minutes into the film. That would have been quite an intense moment because you don't know what's happening. And, you know, it's a good opening. It is a good introduction to the character and what type of film we're going to be getting.
Also an iconic moment overall, like in any film. So you must have seen this series of events before you actually watched the movie as a whole.
Yeah, of course. You know, I've seen snippets, you know, that and what follows with the boulder, are even to this day probably, you know, in the top 50 most iconic moments or something of film ever. And they've led to other films, you know, mimicking it. You know, we're talking, when did this come out?
81.
We're talking 36 years later, and we're still seeing people making the same gag about trying to swap over the weights of things. You know, I can't dispute that what effect this has had on cinema, just not on me.
Oh,
I love I do love the tip of the hat from Indy after he's done the swap, and he's like, okay, I've done it. And then the escalation of danger that comes is like Molina double crosses him. He almost sinks into a pit, and then the boulder, which is accompanied by just fantastic sound design. I'm going to do a lot of complimenting of the sound design in all of these films.
Absolutely.
But here, I mean, my God, I don't know about you guys, but my sound system was just encompassing me, and I loved it.
Absolutely. Look, listen, again, an absolute perfect introduction to a character overall as a scene. He's fucking cool as shit. You know? He's fucking badass because he knows how to stay out of late and knows all these fucking booby traps. He's fucking smooth as fuck because he gets all the fucking the idol and the bag of sand and all that shit. Wait, hold up. Let me take some of the sand out because you know what? Doesn't look right. Boom. And then he's a complete fuck up because he doesn't do it right and he has to fucking run. And then he's a survivor because he fucking gets out. And it's just fucking, if you think about this character, everything about him is in this first fucking 20 minutes. Everything. Yep. And it's fucking amazing. Although he doesn't get any poon. He doesn't get there's no poon tang.
Oh no, we'll get there.
He is a poon slayer, but you don't know that yet in this scene. All right?
Well, we'll get
that
there.
That is the
we'll
one thing we don't know yet.
There was a part that was cut out that actually shows him being a complete poon slayer, but we'll get there here in a little bit.
And not even that. Before the scene fades away, we find out his weakness. The fucking snake at the bottom of the plane. You know everything about this guy, except how much ass he gets by the end of the scene.
We then meet Belloc, who we learn is the arch rival of Indy, and just another great intro. I mean, who is this guy? Why are these natives on his side? We don't care because all he has to do is laugh, and we know that he pretty much owns Indy, right?
What if that's all he did? That would be, and it'd still be great.
Absolutely, yeah.
His laugh is a little bit over the top.
Oh, come on, man.
Of course it is, because he's the main bad guy.
It's a bit too much.
It's over the top because of the effect. We just talked about the sound being perfect. When Indy's running through the jungle and you still hear Belloc laughing, again, I'm going to use this word a lot, Nate. I hope you get used to it. I'm going to shove it right up your fucking British ass. It was perfect.
Hey, we started this podcast with you not wanting to me to be angry. Don't you fucking get angry with me.
I know, but it's hard. It's so hard.
It's so hard when it comes to this film. It really is. Indy runs from the natives. He swings into the water, and we get the plot point of Indy hating snakes, as Law just pointed out. And Law, like, we learn everything about him, except the women in his life. But here, we know his adventurous side, right? Like, we know everything about him here. All of this stuff is what we're going to get back to. You know, Belloc owning him, the snakes, everything. Like, we'll skip back to all of this.
Absolutely. It sets up the fucking movie perfectly. Sorry.
And what a great line, too. And what a great line to show a little backbone. I mean, Jesus Christ. It's just hilarious to me.
Can I just ask a question? Presumably the pilot of the plane knows Indiana.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Presumably he would know that he was massively scared of snakes. So why the fuck is there a snake in the plane?
Not necessarily.
Why? Who gives a fuck?
But yeah, that's obviously his pet snake, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's determined that it's his. So Indy knows he has a pet snake. So you can go either way. Like, why does Indy hang out with a guy that has a pet snake? Why does that guy with the pet snake bring the pet snake on fucking jobs? Yeah. Nate, it's done with a purpose. And
You could have set the snake thing up in the tomb. Like, there's no need to have done it like that.
But it's funnier like this. It makes for a laugh. You know, we've got so much intensity in this first 5-10 minutes that we need a laugh at this point, and I think it was perfectly placed.
Okay.
It was, yeah. That's a good point. It's right at the very end.
Yeah.
There's too much going on in the fucking cave, you know what I mean, with the spiders and all. You can't have snakes on someone's back. That's not going to work the same, I think. hold on, you got a bunch of fucking cobras on your back.
Yeah, and not to mention we're going to see a bunch of snakes later. So
it's foreshadowing big time.
Now, Indy is teaching a class, and there's a plot point here that was cut out. I don't know if they filmed it or not, but I actually kind of agree with it, which is there was a plot point of they wanted to make Indy out to be like this James Bondian type character, right? So they had him banging this student that had the I love you eyelashes. So I think Spielberg was the one who wanted it cut, and Lucas and him fought about it, and Spielberg ended up winning. And I think that was a wise choice.
That's a good choice.
Yeah. I think that's all for the better.
I mean, look, the eyelid scene works because it just makes him in our eyes as a viewer, it makes him fucking cooler. Like all the chicks in his class want to bang him, but he doesn't do anything about it, right? He's just an archaeologist. Yeah. That's all he's focused on. He's focused on teaching the youth of America. But if he's banging that chick, that's a completely different character, dude. It really is.
Yeah, he's a complete womanizer at that point.
Yep, absolutely.
We didn't get the biggest piece of exposition of the film. What I love about this is that even like my five-year-old eyes and ears followed this, right? Like, by the way, this was led by the guy who played Porkins in Star Wars. Indy learns Nazis have learned the location of Tanis, and I love the way he just grabs a blackboard and illustrates some great foresight into what happens later. I mean, all of this, a picture of the Ark in the book, and Indy doesn't even know what the energy is coming out of the Ark, but I, the way they explain this, like all of this is complete foreshadowing, and as a child watching this, I could completely follow it. I mean, it'd be easy to really fuck this scene up, and I think they do a good job of explaining it.
I mean, I don't completely agree with you. I think when I was, 81? So I was 7. I'm not really knowing what's going on. But this is a great example of why this movie keeps getting better and better as I get older. Because when you go back and you watch this and you start to learn about the down moments that he has, even talking to Sala later and all that kind of shit that they're talking about. And it's just so perfectly written out. Like, that's why I end up loving it more and more. You know what I mean? As a kid, I love the spiders. I love the whip. I love the fucking explosions. I love the fucking truck scene and all that shit. But it's these little scenes that fucking make it as an adult.
It is necessary. It's a necessary bit of exposition. It does essentially set you up for the rest of the film. So there's bits I don't like about it. And it's stuff that you've already accused me of nitpicking. So I'm not going to bring it up. But it's just little shitty bits like...
No, Nate. You have to. I'm honestly trying to get in your brain to figure it out. Like, I'm not going to yell at you anymore. I lost my mind there a little bit. Okay.
I want the full Jim Law experience. It's the bullshit. Like, he goes to a meeting with... Was it the FBI? Was that the guy that were they the FBI, CIA? What were they?
That came to his classroom?
Yeah.
No, I think weren't they
I believe they were CIA or something, weren't they?
Okay. Whoever they are, let's say the CIA. He goes to a meeting with the CIA, which he hadn't planned for. He had no idea what they were there for. He had just miraculously had the right book on him regarding the Ark. And they mention the Ark, and he turns perfectly to the page that has the picture of it. It's just little shit like that. It's just, that's fortunate that he happened to know exactly the right page and exactly the right book that he didn't know.
You
that
know,
he
it
would
wasn't
need.
Dog-eared. What if it was dog-eared and you just couldn't see it?
Listen, he's an archaeologist, so there'll be a lot of shit that he will have dog-eared. He wouldn't have dog-eared that one thing.
Let me ask you this, Nate. Do you nitpick the scene like in A New Hope when the troops are in the cantina looking for Luke and Obi-Wan, and the very next cut, Luke and Obi-Wan are not in that same picture? Do you nitpick that scene as well?
I've never noticed it, but I will now. this is the problem: is that when you're enjoying a film, you see past it. When you're not enjoying a film, they are glaringly obvious, annoying things. And not only that, I will admit, going into this podcast, there's an element of me went, right, we've got two guys on here who absolutely love the film. I've been asked onto it, and I know Garrett wouldn't have necessarily brought me on simply to give a different opinion. However, I'm coming on as the different opinion. So why not make the most of it and
absolutely. I totally want that.
Yep. Realistically, does watching those little bits completely change the... Does it make it any worse? Not really. Not at the end of the day. It's not going to change how much I enjoy the film. But they're just obvious to me because I don't enjoy the film.
So you want the scene to have Indy go, I have a picture of it right here. No, it's over here. Wait, no, let me flip a little more pages. Like, you want to elongate it.
I don't know.
That's
I
not
don't
the definition know. Of exposition, Nate.
I don't know. Why couldn't they have just let it be? I don't know. I don't know what I want. I want to not be talking about this film. I get it. From an entertainment point of view, it doesn't work. It had you slowed it down. But at the same time, it's just, let me just pull to the exact page. It's not like he even flipped through the book. He literally just opened it at the right page. It's just, like I say, it's me nitpicking.
It's just weird. It's weird that is something, and I'm loving that you're bringing all this to the table.
Me too, actually.
I'm saying, like, obviously Garrett and I saw it when we were kids, so obviously something like that doesn't come to the table whatsoever. But your mindset you are revealing your mindset going into this movie. I think like I don't think you wanted to watch this movie. I felt you felt you had to watch this movie, and you weren't having any of its shit. Is that fair to say?
Basically, yeah. Yeah, okay. I've enjoyed the experience of not enjoying the film. And listen,
that is
we've
one
not
of the best
even,
phrases ever.
We've not even got on to Temple of Doom yet.
Oh, Temple of Doom's gonna be awesome because I got a
lot. Oh, it's gonna be a great one. Yeah, it's gonna be a great one. We learned that Indy gets the gig, and what I love about this, guys, is that we see where Indy's house is for what I believe is the only time in the entire series. Mm-hmm. Kind of cool that we see how modest his house is.
Can I just say, actually, just to rewind a bit, I forgot to mention, I much prefer the teacher Indy to the adventurer Indy. There's just something about him. I just find him suave as fuck as a teacher. The adventurous side of it doesn't resonate with me. But seeing him stood in front of that classroom, I just thought that's where he looks cool. He looks like he knows what he's doing rather than just semi bumbling about.
What the fuck
he's
is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? What happened to you when you were a child?
You just said it yourself. He put the bag down. He took a little bit of sand out, thinking he'd sorted it, and he was wrong. So he is.
Because he's a little bit flawed. Oh my God.
Now, we meet Marion with some more setup of us learning that she can drink a little bit, which makes her all of Binge Media's best friend, I believe. A fantastic shot of Indy's shadow as he enters the bar. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think of the intro of Marion here?
Good.
Yeah.
I like it because, I mean, we, in the 80s, I would imagine a lot of films would have been guilty of making women the damsel in distress type character. And I think from the outset, we sort of see that to some degree, she's not going to be that. You know, she presents herself quite strong from the off.
Yeah, I'd say she does. She's fucking fantastic in this intro. Yeah, there's no better moment of Marion than this intro, honestly. She's having a shot for shot contest with a giant fucking whatever he is, Norwegian motherfucker, and puts him on his ass. It's pretty fucking phenomenal in my eyes. Never again in this series does she match up to the fucking persona she puts right here, and I love it. Okay, I love Raiders Marion. This is a great intro for her. We will talk about other versions of Marion possibly later in this whole fucking retrospective series, but This version of Marion is fantastic. Loved her in this movie. I love this intro for her.
Yeah, we meet Tote, who calls her Fräulein. Do any of you guys know what a Fräulein? What's Fräulein mean? Is that
Fräulein.
Just another?
It's yeah, Fräulein. It's I think it's unmarried woman or something like that, or it's something to do with
whore.
Women.
I think it means whore.
Really?
I don't know. Do not quote me.
I don't think it means whore, but we'll go with it.
And I'm with Law here. I just love how ballsy she is. Like, she blows smoke in the dude's face. But she does, what I like about her too is that, you know, she does start to falter as she's asking them.
She almost
them,
taps
you know,
out. Yep. Yeah, she almost taps out.
Yeah, like her voice starts shaking. Like, she asks them if they want a drink after originally saying the bar's closed. You know, she's another one. She's got some balls to her, but she's not as tough as she makes herself out to be. And I like that flaw about her.
And she also shows a flaw of Indy. That's her job.
Yes.
Indy fucked up with her. He's not.
Yes.
Okay, so we got the I love you and everyone. All so at that point, your mind's like, everybody wants to fuck Indiana Jones. Boom, next scene. He gets punched in the face by one of his ex-lovers. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Another fucking flaw of Indy. And I know, Nate, it's not suave fucking Professor Indy, but that he's a normal fucking dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
very normal. Very normal. I'm often going, you know, just adventuring off to try and find some artifacts.
You could, if you wanted to, you could.
Yeah. What are you wasting your life for, Nate?
Absolutely.
Indy rescues Marion from getting burned, and then we get just a fantastic gunfight with some truly great special effects. God, I love this fight. The holding Indy to the bar as fire's getting to his face.
Fantastic shit.
God,
fantastic.
And just the sound design of Indy's gun, just how loud it is. And it's another thing, man. Like, it just echoed through my entire sound system. Fuck, do I love this fucking scene.
And also the establishment of other bad guy, right? Like, you're just kind of like, yes, we had Belloc, now who's this creepy motherfucker? And he's creepy bad guy, right?
He really is.
He's got the and by the end of the scene, he's got the fucking scar and everything, and now, you know what I mean, like he's so fucking creepy and mysterious, this guy. Love it.
German dark helmet.
It took me so many viewings to understand like what that burn did to his hand. Like but as a kid, I just didn't really register with me. Like, why is it that this is what gets them to find the art? But
right,
it took me a while to figure that out.
Do you like Marion as a character in this film, Nate? Like, do you like her overall?
She's okay. Perhaps.
Okay.
She's okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not like everything else. I'm certainly not at your levels of it. But no, I certainly don't dislike her.
Boy, how's it gonna feel 3 films from now?
But I'm saying I have nothing against her particularly.
Yeah. Okay. I'm closer to how you feel than how you perceive it. Like, I'm not like, she's the greatest leading lady of all time. She's okay. No. So this opening scene though, she's fantastic, right?
Mm-hmm.
The whole, like, everything else, she seems to be in distress a lot, which kind of bothers me. But she's not annoying. She's not just happy to be there. She's doing something for the story, and I'm happy with that. And I'm only saying these words because when she shows back up, she's just happy to fucking be in the movie. That's all I'm saying. That's a little foreshadowing for the next fucking movie she's in.
Yeah, that smile never fucking leaves her face in that movie. We'll get there. The end of this scene really gets me. Like, when Indy's like shaking, looking down at his chest when he thinks he gets shot, but he only realizes like it's coming from Marion, from the other guy, like right behind the guy. Like, that's just Spielberg just having fun doing what he's doing. And that's another thing I want to point out here. This is Spielberg at the height of his directing career. He's having fun. He's shooting like what he really thinks is like his own version of Bond. He's having such a good time directing this movie. And they say that this is like the most storyboarded film of Spielberg's career. And you can tell. I mean, he mapped all this shit out, and it's really paying off for me.
Oh, absolutely. Dude, the storyboarding in this film is incredible. I mean, every little thing leads to the next thing. It's pretty fucking phenomenal once you sit back and are able to absorb it all. And I've seen this movie fucking close to 100 times. It's
me too. Yeah.
It's fucking phenomenal the way everything plays apart for the next big moment. It's incredible. It really is. Yeah. Nate, you've seen it twice, so I know you're not at the level of appreciation for that, and maybe you don't ever want to see it again, and that's fine. But I'm just saying, like, watching it so many times, you get to see how every little moment, and it is a moment. It's not just a little throwaway shit. Every little moment leads to the next moment, and so on and so forth till the end of the film. It's laid out once again perfectly.
Hey, okay. No matter what you have to say about this scene, no matter what you have to say about it, and you know, you don't enjoy the gunfight, whatever, you gotta say it does have a nice flow to it.
Yeah, it's not a bad scene. I enjoy it. I made a note. I don't know if it's actually, I can't recall if it's actually during the actual fight scene or just before, but I quite like the work on the walls with the shadows and things like that. It's shot well. It's got some decent action. Like you say, it does set up other bad guy, German dark helmet, but it's not a bad scene by any means, and I think it sort of concludes fittingly. I think it doesn't feel like it's too long or too short, this scene. It's not bad.
Okay.
We meet Salah and his monkey.
This fucking monkey.
I love John Rhys-Davies, like his bellowing voice and his mispronouncing of Belloc's name. Another just great introduction to a character who also plays a role in later on in this series.
My favorite character of the whole film.
No kidding.
Yeah, I would say he's the only one who I have really no issue with, and I actually enjoyed sort of pretty much every moment he was on screen. I've bowled you over there by showing some,
I'm
complimenting something in the film, but no, I enjoyed him from the off.
What I love about having Nate on this podcast is there's no suspense between me and Law's final rating of this film, but I am extra curious to hear Nate's final rating.
You know, I'm being overly negative for the sake of it. Well, not for the sake of it, but to sort of play off of you two. Realistically, my final score, my final feelings on the film are probably nowhere near as bad as I'm making them sound to be, but it's just for the entertainment, I guess, partially.
Indy and Marion take a stroll with the monkey, and they are trailed. We do get a great line from Indy when Marion tells him that it took a lot for Indy to alienate her father, and he replies, "Not much, just you." This is just a character that, as me and Law have pointed out, like, he's just completely flawed, right?
what is it about this character that you just don't like? Like, he's just suave as fuck, and he's fun. He's just a fun character to see on screen. Why don't you like him at this point?
Do you know what I think it comes down to? And I think it may be because my opinion was formed before I saw the film. I'm just not a Harrison Ford guy. You know, Han Solo, I enjoy him as part of the Star Wars trilogy, but I would say that that's probably the only time that I really have been behind Harrison Ford. And I think to some degree, because I knew that I didn't like him as an actor, particularly going into this film, I think that probably shaped my feelings beyond, not just about the film, but the character itself.
But at this point in Harrison Ford's career, that's a great point, because me and Law have pointed out over and over how flawed the character is. But at this point in Ford's career, his gruffness and his grouchiness is kind of part of his charm. Like, he's not the old get off my lawn Ford at this point. And if it wasn't for that charm, and if it wasn't just for that charm that just radiates off the screen, we would not like this character at all. So what you're saying is Ford is actually deterring you from liking this character.
To some extent, probably, yeah. I mean, it's not like I went into it going, I don't like Harrison Ford, so I'm not going to like this film or this character or whatever. But I just think that by the time that I'd seen this, I just, you know, you know whether you like someone as an actor. And it doesn't matter what film they're in, you're just never going to like them. And I think to some extent, it's probably that. For all the flaws that you guys keep talking about, I don't see him as necessarily that flawed, because... maybe it's because I saw it so late in the day, and those characters that we now think of as being flawed, the Batmans of this world, they come across as being so much more flawed than this guy. So I'm going in with a different perspective and don't see those flaws as being as big an issue as some other characters. I can, you know, logically sit here and talk with you and say, okay, yeah, he has got those flaws. But watching the film for myself, I don't necessarily... He still comes up on top all the time. Those flaws are still minor to me overall. It doesn't feel like those flaws affect his end goal or his, you know, the next decision or his luck.
But what makes him such a flawed character is that personally, I mean, you've seen from Marion and I guess we had to see the scene of him womanizing the student for you to see how much the guy's personal flaws is what makes him such a great adventurer and what makes him good at being the adventurer mm-hmm. that he is. I think he's got a little more edge to him than what you're giving him credit for.
Very well, maybe. You know, like I say, I've never wanted to say, look, this is a terrible film. You guys are all crazy for enjoying it. It's just, it's what I, you know, it's what I've brought to the film more than what the film's bringing to me.
Classic scene. I know you've heard this, Nate, about the guy who the sword fighting yes. here. You've heard the part of, you know, this guy, he trained for like 2 months with this fucking sword for this one scene. And the time comes for them to film it. And Ford is just, he had some of the native food and it really, really worked him. And he was sick. And he could not film this fight scene whatsoever. So he just went to Spielberg and said, can I just shoot the guy? And Spielberg goes, I think that makes for a great scene. And sure enough, it's pretty iconic in the legend of Indiana Jones.
It is. And it's a great story. And I think I only heard it for the first time a few years ago. I don't know when it all was common knowledge, but I wasn't aware of it until, yeah, probably about 5 years ago or something like that. But I will say I love it. I love the scene. I love the story behind the scene. But coming back to something that I criticized the film earlier about its realism, I like this. This is real to me. This is, you know, this guy is, you know, he's out there having these adventures, and you've got this guy coming up against him with a sword, and you've got a gun. So of course, you know, we're not talking about trying to be gentlemanly, and you know, it's not like he had a sword on him. He just shot him. And it works to me because it's a real scene. It's what a real person would do in that scenario. I like it. I really like this scene. I can't deny it.
Yeah, it does make sense. If a guy has a sword and mm-hmm. you have a gun, you use that fucking gun.
Absolutely. You know? It's a live and die situation. Had this been an official contest or something like that, of course you'd say, well, you know, it was a bit ungentlemanly of him and doing this, blah, blah, blah. But it's not. He is scared for his life and he pulls a gun on him. brilliant. It's a real thing that would really happen in the real world. I've said real like 30 times there, but no, it's what would happen.
Yeah, and that's just one of those stories of just, you know, what would have deterred from the film actually enhanced it. Because, I mean, me and Law spoke earlier about just how much Spielberg storyboarded this film. This fight was completely storyboarded.
Yeah.
And when it came time for Ford to shoot the scene and he was sick, it made up, again, for one of the most iconic scenes known from this movie. Uh-huh. Right, Law? You know the fight we're talking about, right?
Nate, you wanted the full Jim Law experience? You just got it, sir. You have no idea the berating that just happened to my laptop. That it just embarrassed me in front of Nate Pearson. I fucking tore this laptop. It's gone. This laptop's gone because of this just now. Okay, yes. Okay, what fight are we talking about? Sorry, boys.
We're talking about when Indy shoots the guy.
Well, absolutely. Fantastic.
Yeah. You missed me gushing over it and saying about how amazing it was.
You loved it?
Yeah.
Okay. I can't wait till, again, this is a reoccurring theme, but I can't wait to the temple.
Yeah.
Fucking do whatever. I keep saying commentary, but it's not. It's a retrospective. Just to see how that plays into it. Yeah, but I mean, listen, that was great. Now you've covered the whole story behind it, how he had fucking diarrhea and shit.
Yeah.
Diarrhea and shit, literally.
Fucking amazing. Is that not amazing? That's not the greatest fucking scene. I don't think I've ever, and I always remember the scene, it's always be close to my heart because I've never seen my father laugh harder than I did in this moment in a movie theater.
That's great.
Usually he's not even there. He just dropped me off and went to a bar. But he was there this time, and he laughed his balls off when Indy just like, fuck this guy. And literally that's it, right? He has no fucks to give. He's just like, fuck this guy.
My dad laughed just as hard at the show a little backbone, will you line? Like, that was the line that my dad used to laugh at real heartedly.
Has Nate come around a little bit since I've been gone? I'm hoping that...
A little bit. Well, we talked a little bit. Well, you know, as he's gotten older, Ford's gruffness and grouchiness has actually made him into somebody who is not really looked at that fondly. He kind of looks at these films as... But at this point in his career, it was part of his charm. And if it wasn't for Ford and how charming he was, the character would probably not be as likable as me and you make him out to be.
Absolutely. And I wish that he portrayed the later versions of his characters, Han Solo and Indiana Jones, in the most recent versions of those characters, I wish he played them with that same gruff.
Agreed.
He doesn't. And he tries to be a little bit different in the movies. I'm talking about Crystal Skull and Force Awakens.
Yeah.
I wish he was angry and fucking gritty and all that. I mean, in Force Awakens, you see it a little bit, but there's the whole, you know, obviously the spoiler alert, but the scene where he goes, it's just not Han Solo to me. I don't know. It's weird. But the fucking Kingdom of Crystal Skull, again, I'm jumping ahead retrospective wise, and I'm sorry. He's a fucking disaster. It's a fucking disaster of a character.
Marion gets taken away in the basket, and we are then given the red herring that Marion has died in a truck crash. I don't think
Nate fucking standing ovation at this moment in his fucking house.
I loved
right
it.
Right in front of his kid.
It was the best Three Stooges scene I've ever seen in my life.
Holy Christ. I don't think at this point we are meant to feel like Marion's dead, but we're supposed to see how the idea of this is actually affecting Indy. Like at this point, Indy's the suave character, but this is what's affecting Amanda. That's what I believe we're seeing. We're seeing a character development.
This scene, this happening, this Marion dying, does nothing better for any character than Sala, because he's the one that has to bring Indy out of his fucking rut. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, he's the one that has to pick him up and say, look, we still got a job to do. Let's fucking do it. Watch out for that monkey. He's shady as fuck. And then let's go and do this shit. Like, he's the one. He's the fucking one that carries him. Because Indy's kind of broken after this scene.
Yep. Did you, I don't know when you sort of cut off Jim, but did you hear me say that he was my favorite character of the film?
Yeah, I did hear that. Yeah. Okay. And I like that.
So Indy's drinking and Belloc seeks him out for some more taunting.
Absolutely.
I love Paul Freeman's delivery here. I don't recall this guy being in anything else that I've seen, but I just love his delivery as Belloc. And you know, isn't this a graphic place for a Buddha? Like, this is just good stuff. He's like, sit down before you fall down. All this stuff. It's trolling your mustache type bad guy stuff, but I'm still going with it because he's just the character that you just hate. You hate this guy.
He could have a curly Q mustache and it wouldn't change the character whatsoever. Like, he deserves that mustache. He earned that mustache. Yeah.
Yep. Positively. We also learned that these two are mirror images of each other, which, you know, Spielberg plays with that later on. But here it's interesting. Like, Belloc is the more successful of the two. And, you know, Hitler wants the Ark, but Belloc says he'll give it to him when he is ready. That means that this character is just go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, at this point, Belloc's the movie that Nate wants to see because he's suave as fuck and he doesn't fuck up. Like, honestly, right? Like, Nate wants to see the Belloc spinoff movie of Raiders Lost Ark because Belloc is the shit. He's not a buffoon. What do you call him? A bumbling buffoon? He's not that. He's got everything going for him. His classes are incredible.
He's the real hero of this film.
Yes, he is. You want to see the Belloc spinoff. I know you do.
Absolutely. He's outthinking Indy at every step.
Yep. Absolutely.
Except the last one.
I have complimented this movie to no end, but there's one misstep I'm going to point out right here. I do not like when the kids rescue Indy from the meeting. I think that's a little too easy. It's an easy way out.
It's like, a little out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, why do all the kids love Indy? Or, like, was someone told to go do that? Like, did someone tell him to go do that? Was it Sala?
It's said later that Sala is the one who sends him.
Okay, well, that's okay then, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Sala? Like, hey, all you little fuckers. Like, imagine Sala in the back room. Hey, all you little... Come here, you little cocksuckers. Go in there. You see the fucking Han Solo-looking motherfucker in there? Go in there and just fucking start dragging his ass out of the fucking room because he's going to get himself fucking killed. And he does. And that's... If you think about it the right way, it makes sense. It's good.
And now
I'm getting drunk. I'm getting really drunk. I pounded like fucking 30 drinks while I was offline now. So let's do this.
I've driven you to drink. Sorry, dude.
It's my laptop. It disappointed me.
This fucking guy, he won't use the word perfect at all.
They take the medallion to some Gandalf-looking guy, and we learn between warnings to stay away from it, and Nazis are digging in the wrong place, and... You know, this is all foreshadowing, right? You know, we don't really need this scene, but it still says he's being warned to stay away. But Indy doesn't want to stay away. He wants to beat the Nazis to this.
He don't give a fuck. He wants it.
Come on, like, you're kind of playing along with us now. I don't want that. I want to know what what you're thinking at this point in the description.
No, not that. Genuinely, you know, he. I mean. He's obviously an adventurous type, and he's being told not to do something. And I would imagine most characters, most people that are like that, would only spur them on. So in many ways, it plays into the narrative of his character.
Yeah, Spielberg fits in a Ridley Scott type shot as we see the monkey has been poisoned, and good riddance because this monkey was annoying.
The fucking monkey was a cocksucker. He was he was annoying as fuck.
Not this film in general. Any film in general that has a monkey. That can essentially talk to its owner. It infuriates me. It really riles me up that these monkey owners seem to know exactly what's going on. It just, I hate it.
Tell me you've heard my monkey movie fucking rants on the Benchcast. I hate fucking movies with a monkey that does human shit. I hate it so much.
It depends on what they do. Like, I've seen films where it kind of works, but it's like this, where basically the monkey's gone and seen Indy with doing something, and he runs back to his owner and looks at him and does all these things, and the owner's looking at him like, okay, so what happened next? Like, they're having a full-blown fucking conversation. It doesn't work like that. You cannot communicate with monkeys. And it just, I did bring it up earlier because
I'm with Nate P on this. I hate this movie. I'm going on Nate P's team. Garrett, you better fucking turn me back.
So many times this monkey interfered with the plans, and it's just bullshit. And then he's so stupid, he eats fucking poison dates. What the fuck is going on with this animal?
But this is another example. When I was a kid, I was like, I thought the fucking monkey died. I'm all like fucking curious. When I'm adult, fuck that monkey. I'm like, fuck that monkey, man. That monkey deserved to die when it was on the fucking basket that Marion was hiding in, that little cocksucker. Yep. Fucking sold her out.
They're all running past, and the monkey makes a couple of noises. They'll turn around and go, "Oh, she must be over there." No, they wouldn't do that. There's probably monkeys running everywhere around this fucking city.
There's fucking millions of monkeys. Fucking monkeys ruin Raiders for me all of a sudden.
Planet of the monkeys.
Yeah.
Then we get one of my two favorite moments in cinema. This has got to win you back over, Jim, because we haven't really spoken about Williams' score yet, but from the catchy main theme to the foreboding scene in the beginning of the film to this truly amazing theme as Indy finds the location of the Well of Souls, I am truly mesmerized. In fact, when this scene is playing, I just put my iPad down, stopped taking notes, and just got chills. I love this scene a lot.
It is. It's a fantastic, mysterious scene. You have no idea what to expect other than there is a floor full of snakes, and as we've learned, foreshadowing Nate, that he fucking hates snakes. It's a fantastic, fantastic scene. A lot of bullshit going on in the scene that you have no idea what's going to happen next.
This is the scene when Indy puts the staff down and he finds it from the, mm-hmm. with the sun, is what I'm talking about.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah. Well shot. I'll give it its compliment. It's a great little scene.
Yeah, I was totally on the wrong scene, but yes, that is an amazing scene. And you're right, the score here is fucking incredible.
Oh God, it just gives me chills every time, and I'm using it to intro this retrospective because I just love it.
I like how they take the time with it as well. You know, the sun setting and it just sort of like cascading over the map. It's lovely. Mm.
Garrett, Nate's turning. He's way more positive than negative at this point, right?
I guarantee he will here pretty soon. A Nazi flag comes down, and Sala does a great job of shielding Indy as he finds Marion alive. I love Sala. Sala's just the unsung hero here, isn't he? Like, he does a lot of things to save Indy's ass. Mm-hmm. Why does Indy keep Marion tied up here? Why doesn't he just take her with him?
Because she's a fucking...
Slow him down.
She's going to fuck something up. Maybe he learned, right?
Earlier in the film. it's fucking revenge.
He just went through the whole fucking which basket is she in bullshit, and he didn't want to deal with that again. He knows where she is. That way, when he's done what he's got to do, he comes back and she's fucking still there.
He's Maybe. Just thinking, you got caught by a fucking monkey. I don't need you.
I don't want another Three Stooges moment between us. Stay fucking here. I'm going to go do some shit.
We learned that Tote has the medallion outline on his hand. And nice. Which, you know, again, it just took me forever as a kid to just get that. They dig for the well and find it. And they open it up to find out that the floor is moving because there are snakes down there.
Snakes.
Great exchange between Indy and Sala as Sala just says, Indy should go first. Everything Sala says, it's just... Mm-hmm. Nate, I love how you find this guy to be like your favorite character because... He's so dry in his delivery, and it's always fantastic every joke he says.
I think it's because, for me, he's probably one of the only characters who doesn't come across as a caricature. I feel like he's quite grounded, quite realistic. He's not too over the top. I know you guys love your Indy, but I just feel like he's probably the most realistic of all the characters in this film.
Okay.
One
of the reasons I love Indy is because he's so not over the top. Like, I don't see how you can watch a million other adventure movies and not see that Indy is one of the most grounded, realistic fucking adventure heroes ever.
Especially in this movie.
He fights guns with whips. If you can look past that moment, Nate, and I know that was an introduction. If you can look past that, is he not just a dude? Is he not just like a teacher that wants to find shit?
He is.
He's got some skeletons in his closet. Like, I don't see how you can say he's overdramatic or overblown in any way. Is there any other examples like that? What he does, other than like
swinging with the whippage? No, I wouldn't necessarily say that he was that over the top. I'm just saying that I just feel that Salah's just a little bit more realistic than him. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, he sees Indy like you see him, basically, is what you're saying. Like, he's just like, what the fuck? Like, Indy should go first. He's an asshole.
Yeah. Okay. I would totally set out Indy first.
Yeah.
Cut to Marion playing the game of escape from Belloc, and is drinking from earlier that sets this up, right? I mean, this scene is pretty spectacular. I do love the game she's playing here, and I love the fake out of Tote with his hanger that looks like nunchucks.
Fucking great. I love that scene.
He comes out with a very weird saying, which is, as always, you're overdressed for the occasion or something like that. Like it's a common saying. It's just a weird moment.
Well, he's making a generalization of Americans is what he's doing.
Okay.
Yeah, you should know about that.
Oh, sorry, I didn't realize that I was the one that took the piss out of your accent every time you called.
I'm Canadian. I don't know what you're talking about. And you're away. Either side of this fucking argument. I don't know what's going on.
Sorry.
They get down in the well. And did you guys spot the R2 and 3PO on the wall when they get down here? Yeah. Nice little callback.
I didn't want to watch it, but obviously I have seen it.
By the way, I love every time I type Sala in my iPad, it comes up salad. I'm seeing that as I'm going through my notes.
Salad?
Yeah, it's saying salad. Was salad. Every time I go through my notes and I'm seeing it, I'm laughing. Sala and Indy pull the arc up, and the Nazis finally catch on, and they find him. They throw Marion down the well, and an almost – here we go. I have it in my notes. An almost Three Stooges skit happens as they try to avoid the snakes. I love how she burns his whip thinking it's a snake. Like, this is pretty good stuff, you know, and Indy's just like, oh, yeah, yeah. And just the snakes in general. You know, we set this up earlier, and Indy has to find a way out of it.
When he falls down in front of the cobra and all that kind of shit, like, that's another iconic image from this film. So, like, you've seen that before, obviously. Before you watch the movie, you've seen that before. You know what's to be expected here. So what are you feeling as this happens?
Again, it's a decent scene because it puts them in peril. You know, it does, you know, bring the fact that the callback earlier to the snakes. It's good, and I think I've got down here in my notes that I did enjoy the same as you said about the whip and snake confusion. It's a good scene. You know, I'm with the movie at the moment.
Nice, you're into it a little bit.
I'm not loving it, but I'm with it. I'm it's not perfect, but it's
it's pretty damn
perfect. Here's the thing, though. It actually is perfect, so that we're having an issue right now. Okay?
Okay.
After Indy goes through the wall, a scene that I feel conceivably reminds me of Poltergeist happens as skeletons rain all around Marion, no matter where she turns. That's what I thought of when I watched this scene. Like, Spielberg could play this
Marion
card
fell
again.
In the pool. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a pretty scary film for like maybe not scary, but there's a lot going on in this film that...
we'll get to real scary at the end.
Yeah, that you wouldn't necessarily expect to see in a modern day film for the family.
Yeah, and Spielberg, I mean, for 5 years, Spielberg, actually, no, if you count Jaws, 10 years, he would have fights with the MPAA every single film he did, because between this and Jaws and Poltergeist and Gremlins and the next film we'll talk about in our next podcast.
And Temple probably pushed it more than anything.
That's the one that pushed it over, absolutely. It's just... he would have fights over and over, and this for reasons like this. I mean, this is you're right. When I was 5 years old, I think this scared me, seeing skeletons turn up.
It's pretty creepy.
Yeah. We then start the checklist of traveling options for the Ark, right? As they emerge from the well into an airport, the fight of the film happens as a maintenance guy sees Indy and approaches him for a fight. We'll see this guy for at least another film, always fighting with Indy. I love this fight. Just love it. Just fun Saturday serial stuff, this fight.
Absolutely.
Is this the German Tom Hardy guy?
Well, he's a little taller than Tom Hardy. I think he's two Tom Hardys standing on top of each other's shoulders, I think. But you don't like this fight, Nate.
It's good.
It's fun. It's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. I like it. It's relatively simple. You know, there's a lot going on, but at the same time, it's all going on in the same setting. It's not like it's... to jump ahead to Temple of Doom when you've got the, you know, the mine carts and everything's going crazy. You know, this is a one setting sort of bit of action. I quite like it. It's simple but effective.
Mm-hmm. I just love this. He's almost shot. Everywhere Indy turns, this guy's waiting for him. He throws sand in the guy's face. Marion gets caught in the cockpit. All of this is just fun stuff, and I'm having a blast watching it. And again, you can tell this is very storyboarded out, and Spielberg's just having a blast filming it too. Great conclusion to the fight as it is ended with a propeller to the face. Again, stuff in a PG-rated film.
Yeah, brutal.
It is brutal. And Indy essentially lost this fight. He did. Like, he was done. You know what I mean? This guy was good. Like, he was going to finish Indy off. There was nothing else he could do. He gave it his best, and he was saved by this guy getting torn to a million pieces.
And they don't hold back either, because they don't you see blood being sprayed?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right on. Yeah.
I mean,
right.
they could have just alluded to it and just ended there, but no, they go the whole hog.
Well, this is a young Spielberg. I mean, we'll see in later films. Spielberg holds back a lot. Here, he's not holding back. I think it's for the better of the film.
So. Yeah. And there's still so much going on in this scene. Like, even the fight's going on, but then there's the whole gasoline being spilled,
yes,
and Marion being stuck in the cockpit and all that shit, that everything else is going on while other directors may have just focused on a fight with a big bald German dude. There's so much else going on in this scene. I fucking love watching the scene over again. Like, when the plane wing knocks over the gas starts spilling out, you see the fucking flame here. It's just storyboarded to perfection. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah. Indy and Marion run as the place blows up. And I love how Belloc just knows that it's Indy. Like, he sees this explosion. He just looks up and goes, Jones.
Well, that's his calling card, right? It just blows shit up.
Yep.
Because he's bumbling around.
And he does. I'm not gonna argue with you, Nate. Like, he bumbles around because he's getting his ass kicked in that scene. There's nothing he can do. But again, as you see him as a bumbling idiot and not much of an impressive fucking heroic character, I see a real fucking dude just trying to do the best. I've been in fights, dude, that I'm not gonna win, but I fight. You fight. You just fight because you have to. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's what I appreciate for it. I've been in those fights because of Indiana Jones, I think. Like, I'm not going to give up in a fight, even though I know I'm going to lose the fight. But Indy didn't give up. And you know what? There was no fucking propeller to save me in those times, but I was hoping there was. Got my ass kicked a couple times because of Indiana Jones, but I appreciate it.
We then scratch another mode of transportation off the list as the Ark is loaded onto a truck. And I love how Indy's just giving instructions only to reveal at the end that he is making it up as he goes along.
Absolutely. And that goes to Nate's argument again. He's a bumbling fucking cocksucking asshole. Is that what you said?
Yeah, basically. He's like the Pink Panther of archaeology.
Cocksucker. The thing about this truck scene that I just, it's just so gripping, and it's due to just fantastic stunt work. Hopping onto the truck, crawling underneath the truck, throwing a guy out the window. Just, oh, great stunts. And I don't think the stunts get nearly as much credit. In fact, Law, you interviewed the guy who did the stunts in this film years ago.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, Vic Armstrong. And I loved hearing those stories. Just, it was just fantastic. Fun. Oh, yeah.
I wrote an article. I think this was like a 10 spot, Joe Blow days. Greatest indie moments. We're talking about number one right now. The truck scene is the greatest fucking indie moment of all time. I love and we'll talk about it. I don't know, Nate, you brought the minecart scene earlier, and I don't know whether you love it or not, and we'll get to that on the next one. I love the minecart scene. I love the ending of Temple. I think it's fucking ridiculously entertaining. Minecart to bridge. But this fucking truck scene blows everything else away in the entire series. Like, this is this is it. This is why the majority of the trailer was this fucking scene, because it's fucking, it's perfection. It really is a fantastically perfected action scene from beginning to end.
You
don't like this scene, really?
I know. I really, really like the scene where the Crocodile Dundee truck driver. throws Indy out of the truck one-handed. No, I really like it. It's perfect.
Okay, Nate, perfect. Listen. You don't know how... First of all, Indy's fucked up in that scene. You don't know how strong this guy is. Let's not make assumptions on what you can do as to what Crocodile Dundee truck driver can do. Right?
He can't. He doesn't look like the kind of guy that can take Indiana Jones, who's sitting in a truck... and throw him out one-handed.
I think Crocodile Dundee truck driver could kick your ass.
He probably could. I think
at that moment, he threw Indy out. But you know what? You know what makes it a great scene? It's not because he just threw him out the scene or whatever. It's because Indy comes back and kicks this motherfucker's ass. Because within a fucking grand action scene, you get that little bit of redemption. that is one of the best moments of this scene, is exactly what you're saying. This guy manhandles Indy, is like, fuck you, get out of here, throws him some shit. I love that shit. Yes, it's over the top, but god damn it, does it fucking pay off when Indy gets back in that cab and beats the fucking shit of this guy and throws him out the fucking windshield. It's amazing. It's amazing storytelling.
Not only that, but it's how Indy gets back in that's the crux of the scene. Exactly. Because he gets thrown out and the guy's trying to ram him into Belloc's car, right? Yeah. But Indy goes underneath the truck, hooks his whip onto the back of the truck, pulls himself up, again, fantastic stunt work, crawls up, and he actually gets back in. And my God, it's not even just Indy getting thrown out that's the focus here. It's how Indy gets back in.
Absolutely.
That's not what I focused on.
What are you focusing on then? What are you focusing on here? It's just that guy threw out Indy with one hand?
Yep.
That's it. That's it. You're like, oh, well, fuck this scene.
Wow.
No, it's missing out on one of the. Oh, I'm gonna fucking. Where's something to break? Something, anything I can break.
Hey, Tim, do you remember earlier today when you were posting pictures of the hotel about this podcast? They were simpler times, weren't they?
They were.
I don't think you'd do that next week.
Come on, it's an action. Like, how many action scenes can you pinpoint something like this happening and ruin it for yourself? I'm just saying, as a movie fan, don't do that to yourself. And I can't repair this. It's done. But I'm saying going forward in an action scene like this, there's literally one moment you can do this to every fucking scene you're going to see forward or have ever seen. Don't do it to yourself. Just let it fucking play out and absorb it after you watch it again, maybe, or think about it afterwards, then think about the silly shit out of that. Just judge it as a whole. Judge it as everything that happened. Was it fucking entertaining?
Okay. Thank you for the advice.
I honestly think that will make it more enjoyable for you. And I don't think you're this guy. I don't think you're doing this to every fucking scene. I just think you're bringing this to light because we're doing the retrospective, and I understand that. But this scene is so close to my heart that it really is getting under my skin right now. This is the greatest Indiana Jones moment of all time. And you're saying you wrote it off to one fucking singular moment. And that
not even the Williams score here is getting you, Nate. I think the Williams score just completely enhances it. Like, even if you see him get thrown out the window, the score is what keeps it just, mind blowingly gripping.
It's a well done. I will give it its props. I'll rein this all back in a little bit. It is a well choreographed, probably not the right word, but it's a well thought out action sequence.
That is, choreographed is a fantastic word for it.
That nitpicking aside, you know, it is good. It is obviously unbelievable because that's the type of film it is. But it's the thing is, I can buy into the rest of what he does after that because I kind of go, well, you know, he's the hero and stuff. I just don't. It annoys me when things happen that defy physics.
But I just feel like. Okay. But I just feel like one thing led to another with you.
But that rest of that sequence is good.
Yeah, but by the time Indy gets back in the cab, I can picture what's going on in your head. You're like, oh, now he's going to throw him out the windshield, right? Is that what you were thinking?
No, because that's obviously what's going on.
Well, that's a good thing then. Yeah.
I then question how this guy's got the most incredibly strong right arm and he just doesn't fend him off with that. But
you have no idea. This guy could be the fucking German arm wrestling champion, like the national champion of how do you know? You don't know.
Exactly. But then he's not applying that twice. You know, on the one hand he's so strong he can throw him out one handed. The next time he comes at him he's feeble.
But he gets fucking surprised and Indy takes him by like let's break it down, Nate.
Don't forget, before he even gets in, he shoots Indy in the shoulder. So Indy's already slumped over to begin with. So it's not like Indy's like being able to defend himself as well.
And from what I've heard, if you shoot someone in the shoulder, you can throw them through windshield. Like this prior to this movie.
All weight is lost out of your body. The shoulder.
Absolutely. There's no equilibrium in that body anymore. They just go wherever you push them. Then they go.
Okay. No, that's fine.
But then he can drag himself under a truck with a whip. That is possible.
Oh, okay. No, you've explained the whole film to me now. I get it. It's perfect.
Nate, it's science. Come on.
Sorry.
So,
Salah hooks them up with the captain of a ship, and we can cross boating off the list, right?
Yes.
Love this love scene with Marion and Indy as they kiss after the audience of a fantastic ad-lib. It's not the years, honey, it's the mileage. Famously ad-libbed by Ford himself.
Yes.
Something that I guarantee Tom Selleck would not have done. And again, he does the most manly thing, right? He falls asleep right in the middle of a kiss. Like, that's just a real man's man right there. You know?
Oh, yeah, he's all fucked up, right? Because she fucks him up with a mirror. Is this the scene we're talking about?
Yeah.
Well, she flips the mirror around and fucks him up. Tell me. There's not one other character that wouldn't have fucking knocked Marion out in that scene. I'm sorry. And Indy's been known to hit chicks. We'll get to the next movie. He'll fucking hit a chick. But he didn't hit Marion here, and I give him credit. I think he learned from, he learned from Temple of Doom. See? It made him a better person overall. We'll get
maybe more to Temple of Doom than we're getting credit for.
I know.
I love the forbidding image of the and tease of the Ark as it's burning in the boat hole. Like, we know at this point that this thing is just, we should not open it. Oh, it's so foreboding. These mice are scared of it. Like, I love it.
It specifically burns the Nazi symbol, right?
Yep.
In that scene. So you're kind of like, as a kid, I don't even know what a Nazi symbol was. As I'm growing up, I'm like, this motherfucker is not. What's going
on? Don't you think that was probably inserted by Spielberg himself, considering he's Jewish? Like, don't you think maybe he's the one who did that?
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah.
No wonder the Nazis come off so bad in this film.
Oh, they're gonna come off bad. No other reason. It just gives us the great idea that, you know, as if we didn't know already, opening this thing up might not be the smartest thing to do. Nazis overtake the ship, and Katanga covers for Indy, saying he's killed them already. Anyone else think at this point that that Katanga was dirty? I used to think that as a kid.
They go out of their way to make him a little bit shady, right? Like, he's not.
Yeah.
He wants to bang Marion at one point. It's just like, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, gives her that dress. Yeah.
Well, did you say that he comes across as dirty? Did you say, or shady, or something?
Yeah, it comes off as kind of shady here.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Which is good, because obviously it works to his favor later on.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he's saying that he's killed Indy.
Yeah.
Right.
I love Indy getting on the sub, which I believe was a prop from the film Das Boot that they took here.
Das Boot.
Das Boot.
So you said there's one nitpick scene that you had earlier, and I understand. This was my scene.
Really?
When he swims across to the submarine, I've always, always cringed when he gets on top of the submarine and literally has no idea what he's doing. Watch him when he gets on top of that submarine. He runs to one side of the submarine, then he runs to the other side of the submarine, then he runs back to the other side of the submarine, literally has no idea what he's supposed to do. It's fucking hilarious. It's the one scene I've always laughed about in Raiders, because it's like this big moment. Like, they all see, Indy, way to go. He gets up there and it's all heroic. And now what? Like, there's literally nothing that's going to happen from this moment on in the movie. Like, he has no idea what he's going to do. And then they cut it, and it's hilarious. Watch it again. It's hilarious.
That's fantastic.
Just a little overly cheesy for my taste. It's the big score playing, and
You're talking about the submarine? Exactly what I'm talking about? Yeah, it is. It's super cheesy. It's super cheesy because nothing happens. He swimmed over to the submarine, and that was it. Where'd he go, Indy? Fuck yeah, get him! And he doesn't do anything. He just fucking runs back and forth.
People cheering.
He can't get in to the submarine. If the submarine goes down to fucking 3,000 feet under the sea, he's dead, basically. Like, there's nothing for him to do on top of the submarine.
Here's the bumbling hero that Nate was talking about beginning of the podcast.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you, Belloc's looking good right now. He's all cozy in that little submarine.
Yeah, Belloc's in there. Belloc's looking through the periscope and like, what's this asshole doing? Like, what is this fucking idiot doing up there?
He's eating fucking caviar. He's drinking a beer. He's good. He's solid.
I love Indy having a shirt too small and then having to beat up another Nazi.
Oh, fantastic scene, guys.
Oh, I love
the
it.
The fucking knee to the head with the hat pop up. Come on.
Yeah. It's cheesy, absolutely. It's unrealistic, absolutely. But this is Indy, you know.
You know who doesn't do that? You know who doesn't do the knee to the head and the hat pop up? Belloc. He doesn't do that shit. Belloc doesn't do that shit. Belloc asks. No, Belloc is a pussy. But he can't fight Belloc, I heard. I heard this.
He doesn't need to. He fights with his mind.
Well, okay.
I like that argument.
Stop. Jim Law,
I was like Indian on the top of the sub there. I was like, I don't know what to do with that.
There's some talk between a Nazi and Belloc about concerns with the Jewish ceremony they're about to do. I question Spielberg here. Like, what's Spielberg thinking as he's filming this scene? Like, again, this is probably Spielberg just going back to his Jewish heritage, right? As he's talking about they're opening this thing up, and Spielberg questions whether they should or not. You know, They're taking the Ark away, and Indy is waiting for them with a rocket launcher, all set to blow them all up. I love how smart Belloc is here as he tells Indy that he just wants to see the Ark open just as much as he does, and it's yet another cat and mouse game with Indy, right? That Indy has lost.
Yeah, absolutely. Jim here, or has he dropped off?
Did Law drop again?
I was doing a stand-up pee.
Oh.
Listen.
Oh, okay. No.
Oof. Go for it.
No, I was just peeing. I didn't want you to hear me peeing. Another embarrassment. Rocket launcher scene is great. And Garrett, or no, who is it? Nate? I'm one of you. You brought up the fact that they're mirror images of each other. But Nate, it also brings up a good point that you said. Belloc is still he's the smarter dude right here. He knows that Indy's not going to fucking blow this thing up. Where Indy could end everything at this moment, but Indy's a fucking sucker and doesn't do it.
Do you know what the difference is between the two of them? One shuts his eyes. That's the only difference between these two later on in the film. Otherwise, Belloc would own him.
Oh, you said that phrase wrong. One was smart enough to shut his eyes. I think that's the way that sentence should have been delivered. Right? Because he does make a concentrated effort to shut his eyes. Marion, shut your eyes, right?
We'll get there. We're not at that scene yet. We'll get there.
Okay.
But no, I like this scene because it does show that Indy is as curious, you know, for all the adventures and all the shit that he's gone through in the last few days. There is an element of him that is still, you know, he is his core. He's the archaeologist that wants to know, shit, this is one of the biggest finds that anyone will ever have. And he wants to see what's going on with it. And I like that.
So they open the Ark, and I'm going to ask, how the hell did Indy know how to keep his eyes shut? And how does that stop the spirits from attacking them? I'm having fun with the film. I'm going with it, and I'm going to get to specifics of the scene here in a little bit. But the guy opens the book directly to that part of the Ark being open. So maybe he knows from that. I don't know. But I've always questioned it as a kid.
Years of experience.
Yeah, he doesn't know. When he's talking about the Ark earlier with the CIA, FBI, whatever they are, they're pointing at it going, what's this going on? He's like, oh, it could be lightning, it could be fire, it could be... He knows fuck all about this thing. And for him to suddenly know that shutting his eyes is going to save them, it's ridiculous.
Now, when he sees the Ark open...
No.
He sees what's about to happen.
No.
Yes.
No.
He fucking feels... It's just intuition. He knows. He knows. Listen, Marion, close your fucking whore eyes because shit is about to go down in this fucking camp. Listen, Belloc, why did Belloc keep him alive? Why is he even alive at this point? Belloc's a fucking pussy. I'm going to keep going back to that part. Belloc's a pussy. All right? He let Indy win because he didn't fucking kill him the moment he had a chance to. You want to talk about Indy didn't fucking blow up the Ark with the rocket launcher? Belloc didn't kill fucking Indy, and Indy won. So you can't have it both ways, sir.
That doesn't change anything, does it? At the end of the day, had he killed Indy, they still would have killed themselves. It's not like Indy tricked them into opening.
But he didn't kill Indy, and Indy shut his eyes. It's just there's some points. Look at. Sometimes you just shut your eyes. You just know. You have that feeling, sir.
Maybe it was a subliminal message to the kids watching. Shut your eyes because there's some scary shit about to happen.
That's not a bad theory, actually. That really isn't. Because the head explosions here, I mean, they're just great. The they really are, man. I love the head explosions here. But the MPAA had one problem with it. They were okay with the tote face melting. They were fine with that. But if you notice, there are extra flames shielding a good view of Belloc as he blows up. This is the part the MPAA had problems with. So Spielberg had to put extra effects in there.
Yeah.
But just a well-rendered scene, man. And you just get the feeling that Spielberg took extra joy in making those Nazis blow up. You know, I love the scene. I love the spirits roaming around. As a kid, I had no idea what the hell was going on, but I was still, it scared the fuck out of me seeing those spirits Absolutely. Turn evil.
Very poltergeist again, right, Garrett?
Yes, positively. Yeah. Positively. Wow. Again, another scene I just love. And that tote head explode, the head melting, fuck. Just practical effect and just fucking perfect.
Yeah, great practical effect. I will admit it looks good. You know, it's dated. Of course, it doesn't look as good as it would now. But at the same time, given that it is 30, nearly 40 years old, it does look good, that face melting.
And the score, from the moment, like, you know, the big, whatever it is, the spirit or whatever that comes out of the ark, and she's flying around and everyone's like, and Belloc's like, she's beautiful and all that shit.
Yes.
And then the moment she changes to evil, the fucking score, everything's fucking perfect in this scene. Like, yeah. It really is. Like, it fucking turns so suddenly and scares the ever-living fuck out of you.
And even like when we begin this scene, like the one Nazi just kind of takes sand out. He starts laughing like, OK, this isn't doing anything for
me. Yeah, he's like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. Yeah. And then it just takes off from there. And India marrying against that pole. I mean, all of it is just it fucking works for me. It really, really does. And I don't know if the series will get, you know, this kind of scene again. It's going to try. But fuck, I love it. Just love, love, love it. So after this is over, we cut to Indy learning that top men are working on learning about the Ark. And this is more that top tier people just fending off the everyman, right? That's pretty much what this is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, watching it, I can't work out what that ending means. Obviously, you guys love it a lot more. You've probably watched a hell of a lot more. And obviously, I'd like you to fill me in on that. They say obviously top men are working on it, and then you cut to the warehouse where the boxes and the crates are everywhere. Is that suggesting that they're keeping these as a future weapon or something to experiment on, or are they literally just hiding it to forget about it?
I always took it as it wasn't as important. They don't understand the importance of it. You know what I mean? Like, we just lived through this whole thing where we saw, we were climaxed by the excitement, the power of the Ark and all that. And Indy brings it to whoever he's got to bring it to. And they're just kind of like, yeah, yeah, we'll get to it, whatever. And they put it in a warehouse. That's what I always felt it meant. Like, it was a major adventure that nobody understood except the viewing audience and the characters in the film. Yeah, that's how I felt about it.
So Marion invites Indy out for a drink, and this is where we end, folks. On a scale of 1 to 10, what are you going to give this film? I'm going to go to Law first.
Oh, geez. Well, Nate he's really pulled me down in the mud today. He's got around my neck and piggybacked me down to the ground, talking about fucking German national arm wrestling champions not being able to throw into a fucking windshield. Indy not being able to fucking whip a gun out of a dude's hand while he's looking right at him and he has it cocked. He's worked really hard. It's still a goddamn fucking solid gold 10 on 10. It never will change. I'm sorry, Nate, but this is one of the greatest films ever made.
Nate.
I'd be interested to know what you guys think I'm going to give it. You said earlier in the show you were intrigued to know what I was going to give it. I won't change it. I promise. I've got my score written down. I'd just be intrigued, given everything that I've said tonight, what you think I would give it.
Garrett, do you want to go or do you want me to go?
I'll go. I'll say 6.
I think that the conversation, the arena that we are in has highlighted that you don't like it as much as we do, but you still like the film. I think at the very least it's a 7.5.
I like that this is like the GC game.
It is. It's kind of like
the Aaron Donald. It really is. Actually, I'm on the other side here, and I'm fucking intrigued as fuck. So now I know how it feels.
Well, if this were the NP game, then the score would be 0 for Garrett and 1.5 for Jim Law. I give it a 6.
God damn it. 6. What? Give some reason, Nate. Why did you give us?
Hold on. This ends the show on a really low point for me.
I want to give mine. I want to give
as
mine
much shit bit. That you talk. No, I under. No, Garrett. I know what yours is. Shut up.
Okay.
It's your favorite movie of all time. Is it really a fucking mystery? Nate,
I honestly believed what I said there. I thought a six is deflating. What the fuck?
I just don't. It's not for me. I started this whole podcast saying that it doesn't resonate with me, and I will put that solely down to the fact I didn't grow up watching it. Yeah, I just can't. I've enjoyed it. I did enjoy it, and like I say, this is upscaling it from what I first thought of it when I saw it. I probably would be talking fives. It's just not for me. I don't particularly like the character the way you guys do. There's too many things that they do bug me, I'm afraid.
Let me ask you one question. When you watched this film, did you watch Temple and Last Crusade right in a row?
Originally, or for like last year's show?
Okay.
Originally, I literally watched the first one, and then I probably watched Temple maybe a week later, and I think I watched Crusade about a week after that, or something like that. Yeah.
Are you judging the character as a whole and all the series, or are you judging character in this movie?
This movie. I'd say this movie, because especially now, obviously with the hindsight of having seen it a couple of more times, you know, the indie in this film is not the same as the indie in the next film for me. Yeah, I'm judging it based on that.
That's a good answer. I like that answer. Yeah.
I'd like to give it more. It's not a terrible film. I would never, like I said, I don't want to piss on your parade. I don't want you guys to hate the film. I'm glad that you guys find it a 10, but for me, it's never been important to me. And I think you actually missed part of the conversation I had with Garrett earlier, which was that I think when I went into watching this for the very first time, I'd already formed an opinion on Harrison Ford, and I'm not a Harrison Ford guy.
This is huge. This is bigly. This is bigly news.
Bigly, Han Solo. I like him. I'm maybe not. I don't fife on him maybe as hard as you do, but yeah, he is a great character in the Star Wars universe and things like that. So I've got no issues with that. But beyond that, I think by the time I got to watching this, like I say, 10, 15 years ago, I didn't like Ford in the majority of things I'd seen in him. And so I think I went into this, it was always going to be on the losing track, and it's hard for me to get past that. So I think that is part of why I don't like Indiana Jones as a character the way you guys do.
Yeah, this is a huge that's a huge bump in the road. I mean, he's if not my favorite movie character of all time, he's easily top three. Like he just is. Like I'm including the next two movies. Not so much the last one, because, goddamn, I've already explained why, and we'll get there eventually in this fucking 8-week-long fucking retrospective, apparently. But for the love of fuck, I mean, this movie alone guarantees he's in my top three. I just think he's a fantastic... Like, everything about him not being over the top. And I wonder if this is this where we differentiate? Like do you... Is it too much for you? Like, is he too much of a character for you? Because I feel like he's always been lesser of the adventure characters that we've all known. Like, they are, like, and I'm comparing him to the event, like the Bruce Willises, the Arnold Schwarzeneggers, the Sylvester Stallones. He's so much more the everyday dude compared to those guys that's why I consider him one of the greatest fucking characters of all time. Like, comparing him to those three guys I just said, like, how do you see him? And I'll just go like. Fucking, I don't know, Predator, just whatever, pick any fucking random movies for those three guys I just said.
He is a more, like you say, everyday character. He is a more grounded character than most of what Arnie played and things like that.
Which is what you love about him too, also, that you said you love the Professor fucking Jones, yeah, right? You love Professor Jones.
Oh, I'd buy into a 2-hour film about him teaching shit. Yeah,
what if the next Indiana Jones movie is just him teaching a class? Is that the greatest movie ever for you?
Yeah, I'd love it. It would be, I mean, that'd be the fifth film, so it kind of would be like Rocky Five. He'd, you know, maybe teach an up and coming archaeologist, but then at the end,
he's just teaching an archaeologist. I love it.
But then at the end, he's got to fight in an alleyway or something. I don't know.
In the street, he's got to fight one of his students in the street. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of realism, he does. He's definitely more so than those guys. To relate it to the real world, there's just some guys you don't like, and I don't like Indiana.
Ah, fuck! I don't understand. That's what it comes down to.
It does probably come down to an instinct. It's not a logical thing. I can't necessarily go, oh, it's because this. Yes, there's things I can say in the film I don't like, or there's things I can nitpick. But when it comes down to, do I like the character of Indiana Jones? Largely it is, no, I just don't like his face, and I just don't get it.
What is this, a physical thing? You don't like his face?
No, I just don't like him. I just,
oh, okay, all right.
Just he's not my president, so to speak.
Boy, if he doesn't like him in this film, I'm curious about the next.
Yeah, go Nate, ahead. I'm not gonna lie, that was an amazing analogy. I'm kind of loving your excuse right now. That was great. But also, you're fucking totally wrong, right?
I'm definitely very much, like I said, This is why Garrett wanted me on this show. Mm-hmm. He wanted me to take the shit for a few weeks, and I'm going to get a lot of shit.
No, okay. Because you know why I wanted you on the show? There's no mystery that I'm giving this thing a 10 out of 10.
Thank you. Okay. Mm-hmm.
There's 10 out of 10. I think the directing, the stunt work, the acting, the special effects, all of that is just fucking top notch, and you wouldn't have any of that happen if any of these pieces weren't here. I think Spielberg's on top of this game. I think Lucas is on top of this game. I think Lawrence Kasdan's on top of this game. I think Vic Armstrong's on top of this game. I think Karen Allen's on top of her game. All of this, it cultivates into just one of the funnest set of 2 hours I've ever seen in my life. I can revisit this film anytime. And the reason I'm having you on this podcast, Nate, is because if it was just me and Law sitting here slobbering over this film, it would not make for an interesting podcast. I think having you on the film, Garrett, giving us an alternative perspective on it, makes this just a more intriguing podcast. And I enjoy your view on the character, because I'll admit, I don't see it from your point of view at all.
No, of course.
But I see where you're coming from. As somebody who has just loved the hell out of this film his entire life, it makes me view it as, you know, from a different point of view. And that's why I wanted you on here.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Nate did exactly what I not expected, but wanted him to do. Like, I wanted to know why I didn't like it. He flat out told us it's stuff that, Garrett, that you and I have never really noticed and we had to look at, even though we wrote him off and called him a fucking cocksucker. It still is an excuse. Like, it still makes sense if you're on that side of the fence. And I don't know many people that are. I'm really interested in it. I'm really interested in to see who doesn't like such a beloved film. And it was a great call. Garrett, great call getting him on. It was.
If he feels that way about this film, I can imagine what he's going to feel about, if not the next two, the fourth one. So that's why it's going to be an interesting journey, because I think by the time this is over, maybe me and Law will feel the exact same way about the character.
I don't want to foreshadow too much, but I think fucking Temple is going to be the one and only fucking retrospective to listen to in this motherfucker. Because after watching it last night, I have a fucking book full of notes about this fucking movie. I can't wait to talk about this movie.
For this week, Nate, it's been fun.
It's been amazing, Nate. Yeah.
This has been fun. The lead up, not so much.
Yeah. Law, as always, it's been fun being on the podcast with you. And we have 4 weeks of this, gentlemen. Three more.
Yes, let's do it.
My God, it's gonna be a journey. Thanks, Jesus. Boys. And until next week, we'll see you later.
You've been listening to the Binge Media Podcast Network on BingeMedia.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Buy some merch at BingeMedia.net/shop. Subscribe to our newsletter at BingeMedia.net/newsletter. And don't forget,
I can't get enough of soup.
Bob Odenkirk.